All right, Investor Plus is officially live, and it's everything you've been waiting for.
We're talking AI power networking to connect you with other investors who are serious about building their portfolio, not just dreaming about it.
You'll get access to Market Master Her, our step-by-step ebook that'll help you master any market, and an on-demand real estate fundamentals course that'll help you build your confidence. And nationwide chapter access, exclusive discounts worth over $6,000, and a 21-day meditation guide because, hey, balance is key. Building your business credit is just as important as building your personal credit, especially when you can fund your next real estate deal at 0% interest.
In today's episode, we have Amanda Webster. She's going to help us to understand how unsecured business credit truly works and how you can leverage this tool to not just only buy your next real estate project, but also run your day-to-day business expenses.
Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andressa Gadelli. As real estate investors, we are always looking for different types of finance. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about unsecured business credit. So Amanda, in simple terms, can you please define this type of financing?
Sure. It is business lines of credit housed on a business credit card, reporting on the EIN and not on your personal social security number. That is the easiest definition of that.
So let's dive into this, because now more than ever, especially the women listening, are looking for different ways, right? Different ways to fund their next deal, if you will. And these are women that have properties or have done some deals. So tell us a little bit about the process, right? And we want to get into all the, you know, A to Z risks and benefits, but let's talk about the process itself. Where does a woman want to start in this process of financing this in this approach?
Yeah. So business credit has the lowest threshold of entry because you don't have to give tax returns, you don't have to give bank statements, none of that stuff. But the offset is you do have to leverage your personal credit history. So you do need to have a decent, you know, profile on the credit side. And I'm not just meaning the credit score. So you need to understand what those qualifications are. And then it is just as simply as finding the right offer and doing an application. The backside is there is underwriting for business credit. So you can actually discuss the result if it's not what you want. So I think it's a lot of the strategy is the biggest problem, but the actual knowledge of being able to go out and apply it is as simple as you would for a personal credit card. But you need to understand the qualifications is the biggest part on the front side.
So share with me like the top three qualifications of non-negotiables. So I am listening and I say, okay, well, that's for me. Let me keep listening. Or, oh, that's not for me. Let me do something else during my day.
Yeah. So a 680 credit score is the first threshold for any type of business credit, no matter what lender you're going to. The other thing is they want to see a healthy mix. So you can't have a new profile. So you need to have some solid history of some installment loans, some credit card lines on your personal side to showcase that. And then nothing on the major derogatory, meaning, you know, excessive late payments, excessive inquiries, bankruptcy filings that are still showing up, like, you know, closed accounts with balances. Just understanding kind of that piece is those are probably the three things that we look at the most to make sure they're going to at least have some approvals.
When people hear like unsecure, right, I think that they hear the sense of, okay, great, I can have a really messy financial situation going on, so therefore all I don't qualify for the regular traditional financial institutions, and then I'm gonna just go on the insecure here. I don't know if that's just my thought. I'm not basing that on data or anything, but I think it's just a misconception that many times people assume. What are the other misconceptions that people have about unsecured business credit?
Not understanding that you have to have a personal guarantee. So, and truly understanding what a personal guarantee means. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but understanding what it means. It's not going to show up on your personal, but it is going to be there in case you default, right? Because your business doesn't have enough equity, doesn't have enough, you know, gross deposits to reach a point where they can trust it on its own, right? So it's a risk mitigation factor. I think the other thing is they don't understand that you can use this for anything. It doesn't matter that it's a business credit card from Chase, right? You can use it for anything if you understand the ways to do it and the legal following the rules way to do it. Just understanding that part, I think a lot of people think, oh, well, I can't swipe a credit card, so I can't use that. It's not true. There are people out there, there are companies that will help you get B2B, but it has to be B2B. You cannot pay yourself with business credit like you can technically with a business line of credit, because they're just going to give you the whole chunk in your bank account. But there's a huge amount of benefit that offset that one little restriction.
So say I'm interested, right? Okay, you got my interest. I'm curious. So the personal credit situation has to happen first, the qualifications you just mentioned. Then is it a matter of determining what credit cards, or I guess credit companies, right, that I'm going to be a customer for? Is that the kind of the next step in the process?
Yeah, it's understanding, you know, who do you have relationships with? Because banking is all about relationships. So if you have a strong personal relationship with a lender, let's look and see if that one has some business offers over here. Also understanding that all business credit offers come with some type of rewards or point system that you can use for amazing things, but making sure you're choosing one that you'll actually utilize. Like if you don't fly a bunch, there's no reason to go get an American Airlines business credit card. But if you want versatility, then you want to go with someone like Chase or Bank of America or Wells Fargo, because they're more versatile on what you can get those points for. So it's understanding the offer, but also understanding how interest compounds on business credit and understanding intro periods of 0%, how long they are, what happens, what disqualifies you for that. So it's diving into the details. Unlike your personal credit card, you need to actually pay a little bit closer attention on the business side.
So let's break down what this can be used for. You mentioned that can be used for anything that is under all the following the legalities of it. But as real estate investors, right, we want to grow our business and we have different types of expenses that are for operation purpose. We have teams, we have softwares, and we also have the actual properties, all the cost of a purchase.
Acquisitions, down payment, yeah.
All the above, right? Purchasing and selling a property and the ongoing charges. So if you can break down and give us examples of, as real estate investors, what this type of financing can be used for.
The nice thing is, you know, the sky's the limit for the most part. You can use it to acquire the property if you have enough on the limit, right? You can use it to pay for the rehab. You can use it to pay for technology, software, lead generating, you know, subscriptions to find your deals. You can use it to pay your team as long as your payroll company doesn't have a restriction, right? Some of them do. So you have to just kind of know that fine line of that. You can use it to pay for anything in your office, for electricity, for, you know, for your building. There really is no restrictions. The only restrictions that there is you can't purchase crypto with it for obvious reasons, but most real estate investors aren't caring. And you just can't pay yourself. That's really the only real restriction, is you can't pay yourself. And that does extend to other entities you own that you're a beneficial interest in. So just staying out of those gray areas, then you really can use it for anything that is business related. You can use it to go take, you know, clients to dinner, if that's what works. You can use it to educate yourself, go join masterminds, buy a coaching program. Doesn't really matter.
I'd love to walk through an example, right? Because I think a lot of people learn through examples. So, you know, I'm a real estate investor. I'm listening to this, kind of tap my own money. I use hard money. I've used different things, but this is an interesting, another tool in the toolbox, we always like to say, Andres and I. So what kind of funds, because fix and flips can all vary, right? I'm doing a project that's a $2 million purchase, right? And we're going to tear the house down, right? So obviously fix and flips have a different barrier to entry. What is a typical, say I have a 700 credit score, say I meet all the qualifications, no bankruptcy, not that I know of. What
Matt, did you check with Matt?
Actually, that's a really good point. My criminal husband? No. So I actually have probably a higher than 700, but let's just use me as an example with base numbers. So what would be the going rate of how much I can actually get in an unsecured business line? Is it 50,000? Is it $500,000? What are we talking about? And is that increase my risk? Is there a way to mitigate all of that? That's got to be part of this whole puzzle. So, and I want to use this money for fix and flips, say. That's the example I want to use.
Knowing what I know that someone with a decent profile, and you don't have to be perfect, like we can work around all those things, is it's a process that takes a little bit of time. So you can't expect to get $200,000 the first time you're trying to get some business credit. Because think of it, when you were 18 years old or when you started building personal credit, it didn't happen overnight. So you do have to have some timeline of it, right? I would say realistically, if you go after a couple of decent offers and you have some good, you know, credit, anywhere from 30 to 50 is probably a good range. I myself feel I could probably get you better just because of my knowledge of what I'm doing, right? Because I'm living and breathing this. But realistically, you can build lines in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's about how much time it's going to take and, you know, the strategy that you use. And there's three things that make up a business credit report. You got to understand that once you start getting business lines and EIN type of credit, is understanding the business credit reports the same way you do have to understand your personal credit reports.
Oh, break that down, Amanda, because now you're saying, wait a minute, do I know? Do I understand? I'm like questioning myself, like, what the hell? Do I really know that? So what would you say that, what does that really mean? Because now I think that all the people on the treadmill are like skipping, like, hold on a second. Do I really know that as I know my personal? What would you say I should pay attention to and I should know about?
Yeah. So business credit, once you start getting EIN credit, whether it's through Chase Bank or through this type of side, or you're getting corporate trade line type credit through, say, like Home Depot corporate, right? All of which, anything you're using your EIN for, there's reporting agencies the same way there is personal. There's three bureaus. It's Dun & Bradstreet, Experian, and Equifax. What you have to understand is that a business credit report only really cares about three items: that you have trade lines, that you're actually using those trade lines, and that you pay them on time. And by on time, I mean by the due date. You do not get a 30-day grace period like you do in your personal credit. You must pay them on time. Those three things make up your business credit profile. Your goal on most of the scoring modules is to get to an 80. It's a 0 to 100 score. 80 is where you want to be. That's where everyone wants to start lending you on the commercial side.
Amanda, so if I don't know my credit, business credit, where do I go to kind of check it out to see where am I at, if I am on the 80?
I'm just as worried.
No, I'm like, oh, no, I'm not. I know where we are. I know where we are. But where people can go to check where they're at?
Unfortunately for business credit, it's not as easy or versatile to check like it is your personal. You can go direct to the credit bureaus that, you know, Dun & Bradstreet and Experian are the two that I care about. I'm not a big fan of the Equifax model, just my personal opinion. They're not cheap. So pulling them one time, not cheap. I think it's like $50, something like that to pull it. However, there are programs similar to credit monitoring out there that can make it a little bit less expensive. I know Nav Prime has one out there that can give you all three bureaus every month, just like a credit monitoring tool, but on the business side. And there's some ancillary things they give. And I think it's like 20 or 30 bucks a month. So like there are options. They're just not as easily available.
Let me ask you a question, because it's always, I forget when I heard this early in real estate investing, is the time you want to ask and go and get funding is when you don't need it, right? And that's always the goal of entrepreneurship, right? It's always tough when you really need something to go get it. So I would imagine as a tool in the toolbox, this might be another, the same case. Is it the same case in the sense that if I go and start this process, I get 50,000 and a couple of different offers, and it's zero, the 0% has a time stamp on it, correct? So in a sense, this is not just it's not the same thing that if I don't need it, I could just put it on the shelf forever. There is a time frame. So what is that time frame? And am I thinking, is this the right way or am I off?
No, it's a weird balance, right? So same thing with business credit, because there's amount of time, because you got to build offers over time. You know, I pride myself in having an accelerated method to that, but even that still takes roughly 12 months to build hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? If you follow the right criteria. So you do need to start looking before you need it, depending on how much you want to use for your project, right? But there's a balancing act of 0% offers are going to, on average, be 12 months. So it's a weird place to be, but there are ways to utilize it after that. There are some kind of tricks and ways you can do that. And you have the points and rewards that kind of can offset some of the interest, even if you're holding it for a couple of months. But it is kind of a weird balance of like, you need to do a little work to get it and have, you know, time to do it. But you also want to utilize that 0% as much as possible because it's free money for that moment. But then understanding what you can do to make it still advantageous after that 12 months. There are some offers that are longer. I just like to be realistic. 12 months is probably the most average you'll see out there.
And Amanda, I'm assuming that once you get the, you know, the 50,000, that will also and you pay that on time, right? That will also contribute as a track record for future higher qualifications.
Correct. Yeah.
Got it. And for all the women that are listening, right, they do have business credit cards. They are leveraging their miles. They actually don't need unsecured. They qualify for a traditional, but why would they should consider?
So think of it like your personal credit. I always try to bring it back because a lot of people have education on that. Is I don't need my personal credit cards either, but I know that in order to continue to hold a good profile, I need to keep those accounts open. I need to use them every once in a while. I use business credit every day, even though there's no 0% left, right? Everything that I can put on our business credit for the company, I'm going to do that because it makes sense. It's extending my cash flow. It's allowing me to earn points and rewards, and it's still free money. And then we just pay weekly payments so that our cash flow is kind of working that way. But the other side is in order to get to commercial non-recourse lending in the millions, right? You have to have these credit profiles. They want to see your entity have these trade lines and have these revolving accounts that you've treated in a healthy way. We purchased the building I'm sitting in is over $1 million building, and we purchased with commercial non-recourse. The only way we did that was by having these profiles and taking the time to do it. So it's not just about your revenue.
Amanda, you had said something earlier, and I think it's really important as a follow-up to what we're talking about here, is that this is bridge money. And we all understand bridge money because of the business we're in. We're all about buying something low, adding value, and repositioning, right? The asset, if you will, whether it's commercial or residential. So talk us a little bit about the idea that you're using business credit more in a bridge format versus a long-term turnkey asset that you're buying. Not that you can't buy those properties, but this may not be the right funding for it. So yeah, if you don't mind sharing a little more about that, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Imagine, you know, you're buying a distressed property that you're wanting to fix up, right? So you're adding value into that property. You're making the market share of that much higher. So you can take this money, acquire the property, depending on the amount that you have and the amount of the property, you could potentially use it for the rehab as well. And then 2 or 3 months in, you're able to refinance at such a higher equity stake and be able to get a long-term solution that's not 100% of the deal anymore because you now have built in so much equity on the ceiling side. And then even if you're selling it, it's the same avenue. Imagine you don't have to worry about chasing that hard money loan, reapplying every time. If you're doing a DSCR loan, like whatever it may be, you don't have to worry about that because it's just you have this. This is a revolving line. You do a project, you pay it off, and now you're ready to do the next project and you don't got to go reapply. So it's just a more of a strategy, or it can be a supplement, right? How many people go over budget on their renovations, right? So you have a little bit of a ceiling to go, okay, you know what? If I go 10 grand over, I have this card over here that can cover that. And I know I'm going to sell or refinance this property within a time period that the interest is okay.
Amanda, we love horror stories. And now that I'm requesting one from you here. But I think that when people don't utilize tools correctly, like any business card, any credit card, if people don't...
Any line of credit for that matter, right?
Anything, it can be really used properly and you can grow, or if you can abuse or... ignorance on not knowing how to properly use it can give people in big, big trouble. So I want to know the experience that you have. How have people misused this strategy and where were the consequences?
I think the biggest thing that I've seen people do and not listening to the advice or just maybe not reading the advice to begin with is that they think that because it's 0%, I'm going to hold this high balance for the entire 11, 12 months. And they didn't do enough planning to have a, how am I paying this off at the end of this? And then that interest, the way that credit card interest compounds is very different than even a hard money loan, right? So understanding and educating yourself on how interest compounds on different types of capital and how long can you make that payment with the interest and you still have money left in your profit margin, right? So I think it's understanding how finance works is one of the biggest issues. It's literacy on the business side is a little bit lacking sometimes. But also if you hold balances on business credit for a long time and then chunk pay them off, they actually can cut your lines or turn you off because now they think you're a high risk factor. So you can actually damage yourself by doing that.
Hold on. Let's use examples.
That's how my mind works.
So what you're saying is that you paid at the end in one chunk, but that is viewed by the lender as a negative factor.
If you hold it for more than 8 months at a high, what I mean by holding it, I mean when you're holding like 90% of your limit and just paying minimum payments for 8-9 months and then you chunk it all off. The lender doesn't like that activity. They like to see you either hold, you know, lower balances for short periods of time or at least paying multiple times your minimum payment.
Even if that you are still on the 0% APR?
Oh, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, because then they're afraid you're going to hold it for long terms and you're potentially going to be a higher default risk.
Because that's what you can read between the lines, right? If somebody is holding such a high limit and then leave it at the end, I think that that's the key here, especially for women that are listening that are planning their rehab instead of thinking about, well, once I sell it, then I pay my 0% APR, but then you're hurting your credit at the end. So really understanding how the game works.
So is the same piece of that then if I got $50,000, say, of access through a couple of cards, maxing that 50K is not in my best interest?
It's your payment history that matters on the backside of that. So maxing it out is fine. Unlike
maxing
personal,
it out is fine.
Yeah,
so that's I had 50K fine. Available and I pull all that 50K down. Okay.
Yeah. I say four times the minimum payment is what I see as a healthy payment history. As long as they see you making those type of chunks, then your limit doesn't, your timeline no longer matters to that point. It's, I always tell people, even on the personal side, this is true in personal credit too, but if you end up selling the property, right, and you get this big deal and you've been holding it for too long, I would span that over a couple of months to pay off versus chunking it all down. Unless you've been doing that four times minimum payment every month and they're seeing that healthy return, then it's not as worrisome. And also most fix and flips aren't going to necessarily have a hold period of 8 or 9 months. Most of them are going to fall more in that 6-month period, which is okay. They're not going to worry about it. Then you chunk it out. It's fine. It's a weird thing that happens after that 8 months of holding that they look at the risk mitigations. Because of course they make their money when there's interest. So if you hold it, they're making interest. They're more worried about the default ratio.
It's a blueprint, right? And I think that it forces investors to plan ahead, truly plan ahead. What I've seen is so many investors thinking about the lending piece and not taking consideration delays, contractors, weather, interest rate changing, interest reserve account for the interest payment, all the above. They simply borrow the rehab cost, not the cost of doing business. And that needs to come from somewhere. And what I feel is that many times people don't pay too much attention on the business cash flow, not just the property, but the business cash flow. And I do think that if you're listening and considering this strategy, it requires a different level of preparation and planning, which if we all think ahead, we'll be okay, right? But we see people really struggling in the middle of rehabs because they didn't count for that extra month of the sale or some the market shift, and then that price point did not make it. I think that we really need to plan for the best, but also prepare for the worst case scenarios. And that doesn't go different when considering secure and unsecured line of credit. I think planning ahead and really understanding the rules of the game in order to, because it doesn't fit all. So for short term, that's great. But if it is a long term, it might not be, but really understanding I'm emphasizing for all of you that are listening, it's not for everybody. And you really need to understand the rules of the game here and every single strategy that you hear us talking to analyze, is this the right thing for me, for my business? And am I committed to do all of those in order to utilize successfully the tool? It's a tool at the end of the day.
Two things I always say you want to be conservative on is managing the time and the money, you know, and in a project that I'm heavily involved in right now, we're playing worst case scenario. Like, this is going to take us 18 months, worst case scenario. It's going to cost X. Okay. How do we mitigate? What kind of cash do we need? Cause we are using our HELOC. We're using our own line of credit, right? And cash and things. So those are all, I have to pay money on that. It's not free money, right? So important. Amanda, question about successes. We talked about some of the, you know, the horror stories or just where do you really need to be careful? Want to know what you've seen too, and when people use this the right way, how they can really use this as an accelerator, right? They can really use it as a step forward, not the only thing, but a tool, like we say in the toolbox. So any examples with that of where you've seen someone use this as a appropriate tool and how they did it?
Yeah. My favorite success story happened to be a wholesaler, which is a little different, but still, you know, in that lane is, he came through our program that we do that accelerates it. And he was able to get access to a couple $100,000 in business credit. And he was able to leverage it the right way. And, you know, he 10 times his ability to have multiple projects. And he 10 times his income that year, and has grown from there, right? Once you get, you know, a multiplier in there, you know, you just keep going. But I think even on the, I had a Burr client that, you know, didn't know this was available, right? Came through the program that we do. And it was amazing to see this person who went through a bad time in life, went to prison, was coming out, reinvented himself, and seeing him be able to go with not really having any money, utilizing business credit to do a Burr, which is perfect because you're always planning on refinancing it. And he was able to do in that 11 month period, he was able to do four times the amount of projects he thought he would be able to do, and utilizing all that with the 0% timeline. So he was able to get to a point where now he utilizes it a little bit differently, utilizes it for that overhead, for that, you know, safety net. But he said, if that hadn't have been there, he doesn't even know that he would have been successful because he didn't have any other means. He didn't have the ability. He luckily had a good credit score because he had worked on that post getting out, but he didn't have any money and nobody else would lend to him because of his criminal history.
Wow.
Discipline. Right. I think that it requires discipline from people. It doesn't, he worked on his credit score and he followed the rules. That's the key.
And in order to use more tools in the toolbox, you need to be able to manage what you have. And that's, you have to be a good steward of what you have. And Andres and I talk about that all the time. Women will say, I want to buy that next property. And then you start asking, where are your numbers today on your current portfolio? They can't answer what's doing well, what's not doing well. It's like you're scaling. On Justin, you like to say this, scaling chaos, right? And growing chaos. No one wants to grow any chaoticness of anything. So I love this as a tool in the toolbox as you get your house in order, right? And you really have the structure in places. And like you said, use it the right way too, and make sure you're getting the right information. So Amanda, really helpful today. Where can everyone listening learn more about you and follow you on your journey?
So I have a wonderful press page that puts together all the educational pieces I've done everywhere. And it's just fundandgrow.com/Amanda. And that'll give you access to, at the bottom, my social media. I like to put out a lot of educational pieces on business credit, leadership, kind of different things, but I've done a lot of article writing, so I like to share that with the world.
Awesome. All this information you guys can find on our show notes. Amanda, pleasure having you here. Thank you so much for sharing all the knowledge about this tool.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Amanda.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.